hurry. They got you, don't you worry. If you're in a hurry, Bob Curry and Claypool. Curry and Claypool. No matter how your day go, they got a fresh new show today. It's Curry and Claypool. Whether you up north of Gardendale or down south past Vestavia, turn up your sound and listen well, cause we got something to say to you. Curry and Claypool, they in the know. Their topics cover A to Z. So whether you drive fast or slow, just sit on back and feel the beat. It's Curry and Claypool.
Two Curry and Claypools this morning. Two. I actually forgot. Man, I look really pasty white with these lights. Oh, we look good there. Yeah. Got dark? No. Is that too dark? I'm gonna hit it. Oh. Some lighting here this morning. Oh, that looks horrible.
It looks good on me.
I know. It
looks good. I look good. This is live radio. Yeah. That's okay. Terrible. I look great.
You always look great.
No, I don't. See, now I look. Okay.
And I'm only in half the picture. We're doing Facebook Live. We've done it a million times, and we never get it right. It's janky. Good morning. Welcome to February 17th. It is a Thursday morning. Wherever you're listening this morning, that looks terrible, dude. That looks horrible. We look terrible.
I didn't do it.
It's all sideways, and we're all white and pasty. It's terrible. Anyway, the Curry and Claypool show, we do the show once a week on Thursdays. I forgot today you were coming in. I was so excited, and we were going back and forth this morning at 6 o'clock, and I was like, and then you're like, oh, we got the Fox 6 thing we're doing today at 9:35. Curry and Claypool is on Fox 6. We're the only morning show, or the only show, period, in radio that is cool enough to be on Fox 6. And last week, I dropped the word foreplay, so I'm glad that they're inviting us back.
That's how when I texted the producer, the executive producer, I'm like, hi, we're a go? ? And she said, yeah. And yeah, I actually apologized for you last week. And she said, no worries. It was fun.
Oh, we were talking about Valentine's Day. And I mean, let's be real here. And a lot of people we mentioned on Valentine's Day, guys want sex and women want guys to fall asleep right after dinner. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, like many things in life, this goes along with the communication and all stuff. Women just are like cars. They need to be warmed up a little bit sometimes. Now, there's some women you could jump in on a 30-degree day and hop right in and rev up the engine and get after it. And once in a while, that's okay because sometimes you're running late. But for the most part, you know, when I take my kids to the school bus and it's 23 degrees, what do? I go out and start the car about 10 minutes before so it's nice and warm and toasty so they get in the car so they're comfortable. Yes. That's what I do for my women. I don't just expect her to jump on it and just get after it. Let's go. We're going right now. She's got to get ready. Women spend 2 hours. Yes, my women, my harem, my women, they need time. I can't just say, let's go. Guys, you know, I just got a haircut yesterday, right? Christy Spisto cut my hair. I love haircuts. I got to tell you something. This is perfect that you're here today. Because I was talking about, you know, it's one of the things as we get older that we used to hate naps and we used to hate haircuts. Yes. And now I love naps and I love haircuts.
Yeah.
And I tell my sons, and they don't get this, I'm like, I don't understand how you could not like getting a haircut. Because if you really just sit down, close your eyes, and relax, you got, in this particular case, a beautiful woman cutting your hair, rubbing your everyone loves to have their head cut touched.
That's right.
Period. Even if they say they don't, they love it.
That's right.
It feels good.
That's right.
If you just enjoy it, sometimes I think about going to Woodhouse Day Spa. We're going to do our Win in Rome show today and just say, I'll give you $100.
Well, they do head massages.
I know. I'll give you $100 just to rub my head for
they
an hour.
They do
it feels
that.
Great.
You can get a 30 minute head massage.
Oh, man. I'm going to get that next time I go. Birmingham.woodhousespas.com. Birmingham.woodhousespas.com. 905-7676. So I'm like, you guys just need to chill out. And Xavier's even loving it too, my 14-year-old special needs.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, she's rubbing your head. He's like, that's weird. I said, no, it feels good.
It's because he's 14.
And he's on his phone. And I said, just chill back and let her. Nothing hurts. And it just feels really, really good.
But it's also at their age.
And you look good. And this morning, I always have a reason to get out of bed. Maybe it's a cup of coffee. Maybe it's my pain medication. Maybe it's watching the Weather Channel.
Yes.
Maybe it's getting on the New York Post and doing some stuff. Maybe it's because I know you're coming. And so I'm always like, I just need. And so this morning I was like, oh, it's going to take me 30 seconds to get ready today. Because all I got to do is And look at this. Look at this. Look at this beautiful haircut I got. So it's great. So then I started thinking about, see, I've always loved haircuts.
Are we going to spend the
Now, when
show?
You were younger, where did you get your haircut at?
It was called.
Like when you were 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Did your mom take it? Did you go down with your dad to the neighborhood barbershop?
I went, like when I was, I don't know, 0 to 10, 0 to 11.
Yeah.
I went to like a whatever, barber. A barber. But then.
With your dad or by yourself? And did you go every
my
week?
My dad was kind of bald. My mom probably took me. But then when I was.
A barber, so it was a man.
Yeah, but then when I was like 12, mm-hmm. and you know, from the time we grew up, that's when the hair started getting long and stuff. Then my mom took me to like where she got her haircut,
okay.
to the salon.
Okay.
And I was very, I remember.
Sit back, relax.
I remember. Here, I very remember very specifically.
Yeah.
I'm not going to the salon.
Yeah.
That's where girls go. Yeah. I'm not going to the salon. She's like, no, you're going to love this.
Yes.
And Kathy Dukes, who may be watching, who I always kid because she cut my hair for my entire life.
Yes.
She still loves me, even though I have no hair.
Yes.
But from the age of 12 to probably 20, because even when I went to college, I would come back, and Kathy would cut my hair at the salon. It was called GK Salon. And it was beautiful women who did amazing things with hair.
Yes.
Men and women.
Yes.
And I very much, the older I got, mm-hmm. and this is a teenager. You're an older one. I'll get this. It goes from being like, you know, ooh, girls, yucky, to you become obsessed with it. It's got to look right.
You found your little nugget.
Well, but it's got to look right.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a secret. It's a little secret. You don't want anybody, your buddies, to know. Al Cooper, good morning to you. Thanks for watching.
Yeah.
I've stumbled onto something, and you don't want to tell your buddies, but you feel like you need to tell your buddies. So I went through the same exact thing. My dad was a man's man.
Right.
But he was very in touch with his feelings.
Did your dad
have
a lot of hair?
My dad had red hair. Till he was 30, and then it went all white.
But he kept it.
Oh, yeah. He never
that's
he
why
never
you look
rid
like
of it.
You do.
Even during his cancer, he lost a lot of it, but he came back. He had a beautiful head of hair. And we used to go to the barber down the street. He would go once a week. That's what guys did.
Yes.
Even if they didn't need a cut, they'd go in there, talk a little bit, trim off little sides, give them $3 and be done with it. Went every single week. My mom did the same thing.
Get her hair done. Yeah, get her hair done.
She get her hair done. If it was raining, it was a bad day, but she had the thing on her head. And,
right.
and I mean, they poof it, and it would take a couple hours. And so she went to this woman named Janice, who she probably weighed about 95 pounds soaking wet, had a lot of makeup on, very pretty, skinny woman. And so my dad was taking me, and for some reason my mom said, You need to go see Janice.
Yeah.
Nah, my dad's like, he ain't going to see Janice. We're not doing the Janice. First of all, it was a lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And because you get a haircut for $3 or $4.
Right, but when
and
you go into Janice, salon, it was 10, you're having 15, your hair
yeah.
done.
Yeah, you're getting your hair done, right?
Done means more.
And so something happened where I couldn't go with my dad one time, or he didn't want me to go, whatever, and so I went with my mom. And yeah, I was 14, 15 years old.
And you're like.
And I remember thinking to myself, okay, and there was a lot of old women, a lot of gossip. They had the blow dryers going. It was a little traumatic.
No, I remember.
Was in her basement. It was in her home.
Oh, that's very traumatic.
Come on down, Jane.
Okay,
and we walked down there.
That's different.
You know, and I saw, much like I saw my dad in a different element in Las Vegas, I saw my mom in a different element at the hairdresser.
Yes.
I would hear my mom say things. I'm like, Mom. Where is this coming from?
Like, F-bombs or just...
No, is she just gossiping?
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear about Julie? Oh, yeah. Right after church, you know, she got a hold of the sacrificial wine. She drank, and I'm going, Mom, I saw the gossip. I saw this. It was a handing of the torch a little bit. It was almost an Olympic type of thing, and I saw it in a different light. And so I was going back this morning. I was remembering all the times. And Janice, who... I had a little bit of a crush on.
Yes, I know where you're going with this.
Because I thought she was probably in her 40s.
Right, and you were 14. Yes. See, I'm going to tell you
something. And I had a little bit of a crush. Yeah. And I remember she had really long eyelashes, and her eyes were really black. She had the raccoon eyes, and she was really, really thin, but she was always energetic. If I didn't know better, she was probably on speed because she was down in her basement for 14, 15 hours a day doing women's hair. And she was great. And I remember several times.
Janice watching.
I thought I was being, well, I wasn't being assaulted because I enjoyed it. But I was a big guy for 14.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a hard time reaching over top. She had no boobs to speak of. She was really thin. But she had a hard time. And so she always cut from the front.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was hard. And I remember her knee, her crotch. resting on my knee. And so she'd have to say, you know, she could, I can either sit on your lap and do this.
Right.
Or I'm just going to have to reach over top you. And I said, whatever, I was 14, right? And I remember she'd rest her crotch right on my knee, and she'd just kind of sit there. And then before too long, she was actually sitting on my knee while she was cutting my hair.
And it was a loss of innocence for you. It was almost like losing your virginity.
Yeah, and it really kind of made me horny this morning because I kept thinking about that.
Well, it's because now you're 50. Look, that's the total difference. At 14, you didn't quite know what to make of it.
Yeah.
At 50, you know exactly.
And now I just get to stare at the ass of my hairdresser while she's doing my boy's haircuts.
So
I'm sitting down and I'm going,
oh my God.
And Christy Spisto, by the way, cuts my hair. She is great. I love her. Her husband has been a friend of mine for 30 years, yeah. Michael Spisto. So nothing's going on there. But she's great. And I just love the way she
cuts intimate.
My hair.
It's intimate. Listen, it's an intimate experience, right?
It's very intimate.
And particularly, I mean, again, unlike me now, although even now, like I just went and got my hair cut yesterday. I get my hair cut about once a week.
Yeah.
I get it sort of shaved down. I use the clipper. Right. But they do like all this kind of stuff and it feels That's really good. But it is when you got lots of hair and it takes a while, you've got somebody in your space, very close to your face and your body. They are by definition walking around you really close. And and when you're 14, 15, you know, again, when you're 11 or 12, it's weird. It's creepy. It's icky. When you're 14, 15, it goes through your head. It goes through your mind. Here's this woman. I remember when I got my hair cut, you know, again, it was hard to tell. I was 14, 15. But I know now that some of the stylists there were 22, 24. Yep. You know, again, it was hard to tell. But now looking back and now understanding, I'm like, yeah, that's why I thought they were so, you know, that's why they were so pretty.
Yeah.
But it is. We've done, you know, we did the whole show about massage.
Mm-hmm.
And other sorts of things, but this is kind of like that where there's this environment where it's okay for somebody to be right up on you.
Oh yeah,
it's not by definition it's professional and not sexual, but that can't control what may go through your head.
Yes,
and particularly when you're a teenager, right? Because when you're your age, you can either go there, you can go there consciously or not, right? You can kind of go. I really shouldn't. When you're 14, 15, it's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? Why am I feeling this way? This is exactly.
Now, I never saw any other men in a salon.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I never saw any young men. I never saw like 17, 18, 19 year olds. And so I didn't think for a second. And when I was 14, but I remember getting in the car and my kneecap would still be hot. Mm-hmm. I think it was hot. You're out the camera. But I remember feeling my kneecap, and it was warm because she was sitting on it for 35 or 40 minutes, and it took me to a simpler, wonderful time. It wasn't traumatic at all, but I was thinking, wow, that was...
The basement part's a little weird.
And she was always happy to see me. Did you bring Tony with you today?
Yes.
Maybe.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you, the woman who cut my hair, who were friends on Facebook, her name is Kathy Dukes.
She could have had me if she wanted to.
And, you know... She was like this surrogate aunt mom thing.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly as it got older, you know, go to prom or your first date or whatever, go over to the salon. Yep. Maybe it was an LA thing. It was, again, once I got over the hump of this is weird and this is creepy to this is cool.
Yeah.
I really like this.
Yeah.
And that's when, the days to have hair.
It is a Thursday, which means it's a Curry and Claypo Thursday. Dr. Josh joins me every Thursday from 8 till 9:30. Then at 9:30, we'll be on Fox 6 this morning with, of course, Janice and Mickey and Dubs and Toy and the entire crew. So we're looking forward to that. We got that going at 9:30. Also, Blues Almighty goes off at noon and 8. Fresh new shows with Austin Hanks. Going to be a great show. Later on tonight, he does fresh new shows. He's done shows about the Nick. The last couple of weeks, blues bands that have played the Nick that have just been off the charts. Most listeners he's ever had is fantastic. So we got that going on. Damon Johnson show tomorrow. When in Rome from the Birmingham Day Spa. Of course, Birmingham.woodhousespas.com, 905-7676. He does a show that makes you look good, feel good, which I already have. And, of course, sound good. He picks classic rock tunes. That show runs at 1 and 7. And very, very happy because earlier this week, we finally got our Spotify platform up.
Yep.
Everything, including Mission Minded, Adapter Parish with Dr. Alex Hublin and Dr. Josh Claypo from Adaptogen, formerly GT Software. They do a show on Tuesdays. Dark Side of the Pooch on Mondays. We got that show up. So they're all up on Spotify. Just get on Spotify and look up the show title you're looking for. We're working to put them all in one little spot so you can find everything at one time. Mm-hmm. That'll be by the end of the week. But all the shows we're doing, even the music shows, will be up on Spotify by the end of the week. Nice. Super excited about that. And we're working on a real estate show. I had a great conversation with the Keller Williams folks on Monday. Not to put you any pressure.
Just a little bit.
But I mentioned Keller Williams for free.
There you go.
Met with Dusty Lewis and his lovely bride, and they're talking about doing a show. And also, I've got a couple other things we're working on over the next couple weeks. So a lot going on here at Tony Curry Radio. And, of course, you can always find us at TonyCurryRadio.net. If you want to TonyCurryRadio.net, I was going to throw this out on Facebook, but I didn't have time to do it, but I'll do this morning. A lot of people go, man, I remember when I saw so-and-so open up for so-and-so. You got one of those moments? Like, I remember seeing Def Leppard open for Billy Squire, which is not, you know, it's like two huge bands. But at the time, they were growing. But a lot of people say, man, I remember seeing Led Zeppelin open up for Muddy Waters or something like that. Yeah, You're like, whoa. I played a bit last night where from Angus Young during Live Wire Wednesday, brought to you by Southern Precision Staffing, 205-682-2828, where Deep Purple was supposed to be playing some festival. And they were afraid that Deep Purple wasn't going to play. They were going to be a no-show. So AC/DC was playing some dive down the street. The concert promoter said, listen, if I can get you guys to show up just in case they don't show up, would you be willing to play?
Understudy.
They didn't have any of their gear or anything. They were like, sure. And this is before AC/DC was huge. And so they show up. The driver left them off about a mile and a half from the site. Said, I'm not driving through that mud. You guys are going to have to hoof it from here. So they walked a mile and a half. They get there on stage, and about that time, a bunch of Rolls Royces pull up, and it's Deep Purple. And they're like, what the hell are you guys doing here?
Oh, my gosh.
And he's like, we got asked to play. The promoter said, listen, we got you both here. AC/DC, you're going at 9. Deep Purple, you do your thing. We're all good. We'll just do it. It's a festival. It's been going on for a couple days. And next thing you know, there's fisticuffs, Deep Purple and AC/DC are fighting off. AC/DC invites the fans to jump the fence to help them, and it's an all-out brawl, and they're kicking the shit out of each other. And AC/DC never went on stage, but Deep Purple did. They walked off. They took all their gear with them, so AC/DC had another play.
That's
so,
the ultimate.
Yeah, but that was the Bad Boys of Rock. That was AC/DC kicks ass, and that really helped them, propelled them. Next thing you know, there's a big news article about how Deep Purple and AC/DC kicked the hell out of each other, and it really propelled AC/DC to the next level as the Bad Boys of Rock. And so we played that. So to see those two bands. So I saw today where Cheap Trick is going to play with who? In a 2022 tour.
Opening for or playing with?
No, they're going back and forth playing with. I don't know if they're going to be on stage at the same time, but they're going back and forth. They're equal headliners. And I was like, wow, this is a weird mashup. Rod Stewart.
Oh.
Deep Purple, AC/DC, I get that. Cheap Trick and Rod Stewart of all the bands. I mean, it's not that they're both classic rock bands. Rod Stewart's got a lot mellower. Yeah. But I'm thinking, man, those are two bands that I love, so I would definitely go see them. They're playing off
the
radar.
The era's right.
But they're almost too big.
Oh, I see.
Alone.
They're weird alone. That's a weird.
Isn't that a weird matchup?
Yeah, it's not that they're too big alone. Well,
I don't think Rod Stewart fans would be seeing Cheap Trick fans. I don't think Cheap Trick fans would be seeing Rod Stewart.
That's exactly. It's a weird combination. Ooh, that's a whole nother thing.
Right, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Poison, Joan Jett, I get that. I understand that.
But
it
would
kicks
be like, you know,
it'd
be like, well, no, that wouldn't work either. I was going to say, like, you know, Def Leppard and the Eagles.
Or Def Leppard and
Jackson Brown.
Yeah.
No, but that wouldn't work. No, I'm doing this for me, because I'd go see that. I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'd be like, you know, it was just two flavors.
Yeah, because Cheap Trick still gets after it. They rock, and I don't know what Rod Stewart does.
Can do, depending on, he's gonna have to sort of pick his genre because he can't do.
Yeah, well, the last couple of times he's come to town, he did the whole storybook thing, and it was like mellow, laid back stuff. And I'm wanting to hear Every Picture Tells a Story and Stay With Me, and I want to hear Hot Legs. And I don't know if he plays those things anymore.
He's gonna have to.
You would think. Yeah. I mean, Cheap Trick and Rod Stewart on stage playing Hot Legs would be awesome. That would be awesome.
I was trying to think. I don't think I've ever seen. I saw Bon Jovi open for Def Leppard. And I saw, I'm forgetting, the Black Crowes opened for somebody, and I cannot remember who. Yep. But I've never seen. I haven't had a huge where the opening band became. Most of them were, you know, again, I'm thinking, no, I'm trying to remember who opened for Van Halen every time I saw Van
That's
Halen.
A bonus
and
when
maybe
you.
Maybe I saw Motley Crue open for Van Halen. Would that be a possibility? Yep. Maybe that's what I saw. Maybe I saw Motley Crue open for Van Halen.
It's great when you have a band that's already signed in to open up, and then they get huge before the end of the tour.
Right.
Much like Def Leppard opening up for Billy Squire. More people there to see Def Leppard than they were for Billy Squire, because by the end of the tour, Def Leppard was huge.
Right.
I remember seeing like Bob Seger and Buck Cherry opened up. And I'm going,
yeah, right.
And that was like killer, because Buck Cherry just started getting hot. They had their Crazy B song, and I was like, okay, this is going to be awesome. And they love that too, because they actually have a band. It's kind of like you see this in comedy a lot.
Right. You want someone to open up who's really good, but not too good.
Exactly. And in comedy, and Bruce Ayers will tell you,
yes,
you know, it's great for the comedy club owner, because he's a double billing killer guy. And you want to have, but you want to have a guy that's pretty funny. Gets him warmed up. Second guy gets him drinking and knocks it out. And then the third guy just takes it to another level. But I've seen acts where the second guy's funnier than the first. And so it's kind of like, you know, and even the headliners will tell you, find me a guy, get him warmed up, but I don't want someone.
Well, because you
funny.
Also don't want them, particularly in a comedy, you don't want people to be like exhausted, right? You don't want them to be like sort of funny, burnt on funny.
Yeah. Because the big guys who are really insecure.
Yeah.
Don't want anybody.
Right.
I headline it myself. It's a one-time show. You get there at 8 o'clock, I'm going to knock their boots off. But a lot of guys like them to warm up, because laughter is infectious. When you start laughing at anything, you'll laugh at anything. And so it's good. So anyway, I thought that was a really interesting riff. Go to TonyCurryRadio.net. You can check it out. And of course, on the Tony Curry Radio app, download the app. It's great. We've been getting a ton of downloads over the last couple of weeks, and a lot of it has to do with all of these specialty shows we're doing. And now, of course, you can listen to them on demand on Spotify. On our Tony Curry Radio app. Maybe I'll get Joe Rogan on next week and help us out a little bit. So before we get into our program today, and Dr. Fauci, who is human, he's not a robot, he's not a science robot.
And you can cut me off at any point.
I don't want you, just because I bring the Fauci, you get all fired up. You don't need to be fired up. I love Tony Fauci.
I can do civil discourse.
I love Tony Fauci. I think he's in the most. I'm surprised he hasn't quit. In the name of science, he probably can't. But I'm telling you,
have a stroke.
Yeah,
And
I know people got stories about him. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it. I think he's great. I think he's between a rock and a hard place. He's saying things we don't want to hear. We always, you know, there's some people out there go, tell me what I want to hear, or tell me the truth. Tell me the truth. And then I'll deal with it. But do you want me to tell you the truth? I do this with my kids all the time. You want me to tell you the truth, or you want me to tell you what you want to really hear?
Right.
Because you know the truth.
Right.
You can't handle the truth.
That's right.
Tony Fauci's been doing that, and he doesn't care. And he's been getting hammered, death threats the whole nine yards. It's not fair to the guy. I love the guy, and I think he's been put in a really, really powerful and responsible position. I think he's handled it well. So we'll talk about it. He got human yesterday.
Yes.
And part of me is kind of like, I could have gone, well, here we go.
You know,
2,200 people a day are dying. Now you're backing off. What's going on? It's not fair, because this disease, virus has changed every single day, and every day we're trying to figure it out, and it morphs into, it's like it or the thing, it morphs into whatever you don't think it is. Next thing you know, it's your wife. It's morphed into your wife. You're like, what the, and you don't even realize who it is or what it is. It's like aliens living among us. Mm-hmm. They've morphed into human beings. We don't even know what they're doing. They're getting all kinds of intel on us. So we'll talk about that in a second, but I wanted to mention Ed and Fred.
Yeah.
Speaking of concerts, Fred passed away about a month ago. He got stage 4 cancer about 6 or 7 weeks ago. We did a GoFundMe page for him. And, of course, you know these guys. They're concert-going guys. I remember working my butt off to get backstage. I didn't always have backstage passes, but I always got backstage. And I'd always get back there. And there's Ed and Fred. They're always back there before I was. It's like, how'd you guys get back here? You know, and they're making guitar straps for the Rolling Stones. They're friends with Ron Wood, Kiefer Sutherland, Billy Gibbons. They know everybody. They got a scrapbook of all these rock and rollers. They're huge. Had them on the show after Dusty Hill died and after Charlie Watts died. They're friends with The Who. They're good friends with John Entwistle before he passed away. They've just rubbed shoulders with a lot of these rock and roll loyalty dudes. And so Fred passed away.
Yeah.
And Ed and Fred are like peanut butter and jelly, salt and pepper. Mick and Keith, they're always seen together. They did everything together. And my thoughts and prayers go out to Ed, who I can't imagine what he's going through, because they were twins. They're 6'7", 6'8". They did everything together. And from a therapeutic standpoint, I pray and wish them the best. I'll be speaking at Fred's funeral tomorrow. It's at St. Francis Xavier Church tomorrow at 10 o'clock visitation. We'll have Mass at 11 o'clock and the burials at 2:45 in Montevallo. And I wanted to mention that. I told them that I would mention that on Facebook Live and, of course, on Tony Curry Radio in case. But if you've ever gone to a concert, they were impossible to miss. They were at every concert. I went to Barry Manilow. They were there. I mean, every show I went to, I see Ed and Fred. Every show I went to, I saw Ed and Fred.
That's interesting.
And they did incredible work with their guitar straps and just great guys. Yeah. And I always felt super comfortable around them, probably because of our size. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, go on vacation with them, but I certainly hung out with them numerous times. So our thoughts and prayers go out to Ed and Fred and Fred. And his funeral tomorrow, St. Francis Xavier tomorrow, which is the church I used to go to.
That's right.
Good Catholic boys. Yes. Go to church every Sunday, and then we'll have
I think it's great that you're going to be giving the eulogy.
Well, you know.
Or a eulogy.
I have been asked to do eulogies. Ironically enough, the one eulogy I wish I did that I never did was my father's, and that was on me. I wish I could have done that, and I didn't do it. And the reason I didn't do it was because I wasn't asked to do it until the day of. And it hurt my feelings because I was super close. I was only closer with my dad. I just had a different relationship with my dad. I went on vacation with him and stuff. And I was kind of like, oh, now you're asking me the day of the funeral to. And so I was kind of like, no, I'm good. And I wish I had done that. I let my feelings get in the way and not knowing what it takes to put a funeral on and be the executrix and everything my sister did. She did a wonderful job at getting things together, and I wish I'd said some. Anyway, but I've been asked to eulogize several people that I'm not in their family.
Right.
I'm friends with them.
Right.
And I'm kind of like,
why me?
Why me?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm honored to do it, and I would never say no, but I'm thinking of all the people that this individual knew, you couldn't find someone else that would be able to speak more openly about their life. And maybe not.
You never know.
And maybe not.
You don't know.
Have you ever been asked to eulogize someone that you really didn't know at all, but they thought you knew them well?
No, because I'm not like you. Like, you're a man of the people. You're beloved, and, like, you know people. So I've never been... I mean, I've been asked to come up and say a few words, not to give the eulogy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've given the eulogy at my family members, but no, I've never been... That would... I don't know how I would do that.
They say, well, can you say a few words? And then you realize you know, there's like two or three people there, and you're like, it makes you feel really special because out of all the people they knew, I'm one of the three. And so that's kind of like, wow. And it's happened two other times. Once with a neighbor down the street who died of brain cancer. And again, he was my neighbor. I knew him. We went fishing together. I loved him. But I knew that he had a family. And so I was surprised. So I'm honored to do it and looking forward to it. And I'll keep it short. The Catholic religion has got this thing at funerals. I hate it. They even did it at my dad's funeral.
Does anyone
want to
say?
They want to know what you're going to say.
Oh, interesting.
And you got to keep it at 5 minutes or less. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah, and I'm like,
why is that?
What is this, the Grammys? What is this, the Academy Awards? What, is the music going to start playing? I mean, what are we doing? And I'm like, no.
Why do they do that?
Because they don't want...
Yeah,
this
no,
to be
I
this
that,
blubbering,
right.
And people are just crying.
5 minutes is as long as people can hold their shit together.
Yeah, it's about the last time. And they wanted to see my can I see your notes? I'm like, no, you can't see my notes. Yeah. And I'm like, no. Now, they'll back off and go, but it's like, what do you got, another funeral at one? I mean, do we have to usher in? And so I don't know why. Maybe this is just at some Catholic churches, but every time I've done a Catholic funeral, we're trying to keep it to 5 minutes or less.
I can understand. I can understand the sort of window trying to keep it at 5 minutes or less, I guess.
Maybe they're doing it for me. Maybe they're doing it for me to keep it short.
Yeah.
And if it goes longer, they're not going to cut you off.
No, but you see this in the Grammys. You see this in every presentation where people are... That's a lot of water you're drinking.
Thirsty.
You see this where people are sort of up there to give their thoughts. If it's prepared... That's one thing, and then it just gets boring because it's long.
Yeah.
But you've done live communication for your whole career.
Yeah.
5 minutes is a long time.
It is.
particularly to speak from the heart.
Yeah.
No matter how much you love the person or think about them. Yeah. And so after about 5 minutes, you start either repeating yourself, or if it's a really emotional thing, like you said, that's when people start falling apart.
Yeah.
And while it's okay to watch the raw emotion, for the sake of the ceremony, I can see why they're, you know.
The best thing to do is tell stories.
Yep.
People want to hear stories.
Maybe that's also why they wanted 5 minutes, because you could go on.
You want to tell stories.
Back in 1962.
Yeah, but if you go up there and just try to tell people, because everyone knows what the person's all about.
They were a great person.
Now I've done one funeral.
Where they weren't such a great person.
They were great, and I did it with Bruce Ayers. And Bruce was asked to eulogize this individual, and he's like, I don't know why the hell they asked me to do it. I'm happy to do it, but I'm kind of like.
Yeah.
And he had the greatest opening line. He said, you know, sometimes you can't tell if someone's crazy or brilliant.
Oh, that's good.
In this particular case, David was both.
Well, we're like, that's good.
Yeah. Because he was crazy, and he had to be brilliant to be as crazy as he was to pull off what he did and pull it off.
That's super good.
And this guy probably did some people wrong, was in an industry that opened itself up to a lot of different temptations, and he pulled it off. And it was a drug overdose, and it was just unfortunate the way he went. And, again, I think it kind of plays into how it's, if you're eulogizing your 83-year-old grandma, you go on for hours. When someone has a drug overdose in their 40s, it's kind of like it's one of those shockers, and everyone's still shocked by the moment and what happened. And certainly, surprising death is really difficult to get through for a eulogy.
I always have my thing is always read the room and read the room, read the situation, and ask yourself, who are you doing this for?
Yeah.
Who are you speaking for?
Yeah. If you're speaking for yourself, you probably don't need to get up there.
That's exactly.
Because I know some people are like, I screwed that up. I'm like, it doesn't matter, dude. A lot of people don't want to eulogize because they're not public speakers.
Well, yeah.
I'm like, this is therapeutic. When I did my mom's, I had time to prepare for a week. And it was so, so therapeutic for me to go back through that week.
Yes.
And write down notes. Yes. And then I was ready to bury her. When I saw her, I was like, it was closure for me. It'll never be closure when you lose a parent, but I felt like I was almost talking to myself through the process. It was great. Funerals are very therapeutic, and as much as we hate going to funerals, I always feel good when I go. I always feel better about showing my support and being there. I used to go to some funerals I didn't even know the guy. Like at our church, they have in the thing, so and so passed away, and I'm like, I don't know, but I'll show up because I think people like to see bodies, because obviously if you have a funeral and there's only three people there, that says a lot about your life.
You're a trippy guy. This is what I love about doing this, and I love about you doing TKR and not just pure music. Yeah. Like, people are getting to see a side of you, getting to see a part of you that they probably have never seen in your entire radio career. Like, you think about it. I don't know what you talked about. I don't remember when you were on, when you were spinning records, you were doing 99.5, yeah. But you didn't have a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
You know, and I know when you did sports, you would share things, but this, and I don't think it's just because I'm here, that this, you definitely put out pieces of you that the people who know you publicly do not get to see. I watch you. You put out, and yeah. It's not like, it's not the every time, yeah. But it's like that. Like, that was a crystallized moment. That was a great moment.
You ever read the obits? Thank you, by the way.
I used to, but now we don't have newspapers.
I wish they put in the obits how the person died.
Yeah, I'm always looking for that. Or not.
When you see
now.
Someone that's 32 pass away, I want to know how.
But maybe they don't want, you know, because again, this is.
Yeah, but we all know.
Well, you don't know. If they're 32, they could have died from anything.
Well, then we should know.
Well, but maybe you don't. Maybe it's a celebration.
If you die of cancer, if you die of something that's not controlled by them, then they'll throw it in there. But if they get by a car, or they get bitten by a snake.
It's a declaration and celebration of their life. The obituary is to memorialize them, not to describe their demise.
Yeah.
That's why you do it that way.
Yeah. Think about something in your life.
Why are we doing this?
Think about something in your life that you thought at the time was the most important thing you were going to do up to that point in your life. What would it be?
important.
Yeah, like you knew this was going to be a huge moment.
My bar mitzvah.
Okay. You think about that, and then when you go to heaven and you're spending eternity,
yeah,
and God's grace, you're going to look back at that moment, and it's going to be like this. And you're going to realize that the entire 80, 90 years I hope that you're on earth is just such a small piece of what your entire eternity and your soul is all about.
Think about it. Okay, now we're getting super deep here, but think about it.
We have no idea.
Think about it. Up to whatever point, you don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So I was just going to say, you know, so like, when I was, you know, before 13, it was my bar mitzvah and losing my virginity. Mm-hmm. Those were like the two.
Yeah.
Right? But then I didn't know what it was going to be like to get married. I didn't know what it was like to have a child. I didn't know what it would be like. I don't know what it's going to be like to have a grandchild if I do. So we only know what's in front of us, and we can only, you know, anticipate what it'll be like. That's why they said, Eric Erickson talked about when you're about 70, 80, you start reading the story of your life. You don't really do that at 40, 50. Yep. At 40, 50, it's like you're getting a preview of the story of your life, and then you're like, oh, crap, I better write something good for the next one. But like 70, 80 is really where people kind of come to this point. It's not so much that they're afraid they're going to die, but they know logically that I don't have much. So what they do is naturally they look back and they read their life. And what you hope for people is, because I've seen this in therapy, you know, you hope that they don't read the story and then regret the whole story.
Yeah.
Not that they don't have regrets, but you want people to look back and go, this is who I was, and I'm okay with that. This is why it's hard for people who are incarcerated, people who have made huge mistakes, because if it sticks with them by the time they get 70, 80, sometimes all they can focus on is whatever that was.
Yeah.
Okay, that was deep.
Give yourself some grace. Realize that you're human. I hate when people say, oh, we're all human, we're going to make mistakes. It doesn't mean you're allowed to make mistakes or give you excuses for mistakes. It just means that you better learn from your mistakes and try not to make your mistakes again. And if you can't get past that, you're right. Then you're losing out on life. Then you're not really serving God's grace and his will by sitting there doing that. All right. Top U.S. infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci said yesterday it's time for the United States to start inching back towards normality. I didn't think we were ever going to have normal again. There he goes, waffling again.
Here he is. First he tells us to put a damn mask on.
He said February 18th, 2021, that we're never going to have normal. Now he's saying we're going back to normal. Give the guy a break.
I love that statement, though. That is such a scientific and political statement. Yep. Inching back towards normality. All three of those words are beautifully put.
There's one guy that has had every word he's ever said in the last 3 years, every single word is looked upon. Oh, what's an inch towards? He said U.S. states are facing tough choices in their efforts to balance the need to protect their citizens from infections and growing fatigue with the pandemic that has dragged into its third year. There's no perfect solution to this. Earlier on Wednesday, U.S. health officials said they are preparing new COVID-19 guidance on many aspects of the virus response on the Omicron surge and case declines. New York, California, Connecticut, Delaware, Oregon, they're all opening back up. The fact the world, the United States, and particularly certain parts of the United States, are just up to here with COVID, they just really need somehow to get their life back.
Go ahead. Sorry.
He's acknowledging that.
But he acknowledged that before.
Like I know, this is the first time I've seen him actually say, we've had enough. And I get that. And listen, we got the bridge going to Canada shut down. Yeah. We've got 50-50 on mandates for face mask and not face mask in school. I told my daughter the other day, I'm starting to see the effects of not only COVID and Omicron. But I told her, I said, you're vaccinated. If you don't want to wear a mask, be careful, but you don't need to wear a mask. If they're telling you you don't have to, then don't wear. If it's a mandate, you got to do it. That's the deal. I'm not going to fight you on that, but if they're allowing you not to wear a mask in school, don't feel it. And she was like, thank you. And I was like, no problem. Just be careful. Just be careful. You don't want to be reckless and throw everything aside, but you got to start inching towards that. He said even with the positive trends, we're still averaging 2,200 American deaths a day. Cases were at 147,000 last week alone, a decrease of some 40% from the previous week. He acknowledged that states' revised policies could involve trade-offs and some unnecessary infections, but hewing too closely to strict prevention policies were also harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Is the impact on mental health, is the impact on the development of kids in school, is the impact on schools, is that balanced against trying to be totally pristine and protecting against infection? I don't have the right answer for that. And the right answer is what he's saying. So I can't tell you whether it's right or wrong. All I can tell you from a science standpoint is what we need to do to get rid of this bug, this virus. But just because you're doing it to the T, to the nines, we can't. Listen, if you don't want to get Omicron, you can do it. Mm-hmm. You could stay home by yourself for the rest of your life, and you'll never get it. But that will kill you. And you're not living your life. And I know that's an extreme.
That's an extreme.
But that is extreme. But if you really don't want to get Omicron, then you can do that.
But you can do other things.
But you'll die of loneliness. But you don't know. You don't know.
But
if you go outside your house, you can get Omicron.
But it's relative risk.
Yeah.
That was my whole. That.
For the people that keep thinking, you know, and listen, I am a science guy. I love science. I believe in science. Mm-hmm. We have the best scientists in the world working on this. I think they've done a miraculous job of somehow getting vaccines. I know that it's been very, very difficult. And again, this is one of those, do you want to know the truth or do you want me to tell you what you want to hear?
I love that.
And the truth is somewhere in the middle.
That's right.
And for him to finally, I'm not say finally, for him to realize, he's realized it, but he's a scientist. He's got to, listen, he's going to say some things that you're not going to want to hear because we're tired, but this is the deal and this is my job and this is what I'm going to do. But he also realizes that, yeah, we are fatigued up to here.
Of course.
And we do hope.
And that's part of the science. Yeah. Like, to me, that's part of the, I don't know, that's part of the observation.
Yeah.
Right? That's part of what you're weighing.
Yeah.
And I think early on, I know early on what all scientists were saying was, we can suck it up.
Well, at that point in time, we didn't know it was going to last 3 years.
Right.
And so, yeah, we were like, suck it up, wear your mask, shut up, get vaccinated, let's get through this.
Right.
Well, we didn't do that.
Right.
And so now this is the new normality. This is the new science for me. And I'm going to use Jim Parsons, Sheldon Cooper from The Big Bang Theory. The allure of his character... I just found Big Bang Theory like 3 or 4 weeks ago. I don't know why. I've never watched it, and I love the show. I really do. It makes me feel smarter to watch it because I'm a dumbass. But one of the allures of his character is that he can't get out of his own way when it comes to science. Everything in his life, right. From sex to intimacy to everything he does, is science. He speaks it, right. And it's a character. It's a TV show. I get it. We don't want our scientists. We want our scientists to be super smart and think scientifically when we need it, but we want them to be human.
Yes.
And when Jim Parsons' character is human, that's when we embrace him. We go, oh,
yes.
See, you can hug your wife and not ask her if it's okay if you need to wash your hands first, right?
Yes.
That's when we embrace his character, and that's where I'm embracing Anthony Fauci. Listen, I know people in the pharmaceutical business. I know scientists who say they've got dirt. I don't care. I haven't seen it. I don't care that he's in bed with pharmaceutical companies, that he's trying to get his Johnson & Johnson stock up. I don't want to hear about it. I just think he's been put in an incredibly difficult situation. This is a situation that I promise you he never wanted to be in.
No.
And thank God he has stuck through it and been there for us. And I will stand by that. And again, the people that don't like Anthony Fauci are the ones that have been inefficiently or it's been a situation where they can't get out of their own ways because they can't figure it. It's an inconvenience.
Right.
We don't want to hear what he's got to say because we know it's going to be an inconvenience to us, but it's what we have to do. And now he's finally saying, listen, I think it's time for us to try to get back to where we're at. With that being said, though, and with the knowledge he knows, hopefully that is his way of telling us that we are done. I posted that picture of Pete Townsend. Pete Townsend's going on the road.
No, we don't know.
He believes
that
COVID's behind it. He says, I think we're finally done.
I think we got to be.
We don't, but.
Because again, those words, what was it? Gradually? No, begin to inch back towards normality. You know why he says that? Because
we won't have far to back up.
Right. No, it's true. It's true. Because he knows.
When you enter the pool, you can always step back out again.
That's exactly, because he knows that there, he knows for sure that there is a chance that we will see either another variant, another uptick, another upsurge. Again, this is the part that I get frustrated with people like, we've been through enough cycles of this.
Yeah.
So to say that it's not going to happen is ill-informed at best. It's, we don't know if it's going to happen, but if you base it off everything we saw, there's a reasonable chance that it could happen. However, what he's saying is, given the strife that we've all been dealing with, given where the numbers are, this is a good time to start inching back. My big fear with all that, and I'll tell you quickly about a post that Ellen Eaton posted. My big fear is people do this. This is us. Oh, thank God it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and inching back means I'm done. We're done. And he's never going to say that. No scientist is going to say that, because no scientists know if we're done. So Ellen Eaton posted something. She's a UAB doc. She posted something today, which I knew, but I never thought about. She asked about why, she posted something about why she keeps posting despite death threats to her families, and why she keeps advocating for people to be careful, etc. And she talked about the whole group of people. And if you are one of these people, or you have a loved one, you know what I'm talking about, who are so immunocompromised, they got cancer, they've got other things, that they are sitting ducks.
Yep.
And what she said is, I'm going to keep posting and I want people to be careful, because you know what? There are people around us who could die from this.
Sure.
And I just think it's an interesting, I'm not saying don't live your life, but I am saying, you know, I have a couple friends actually who've got some really serious chronic illnesses, and they are scared to death because of this, different than you and me. Yep. This is all about...
We just want, but you know, we look at scientists because the majority aren't scientists, and we need them, and they're super important, and they teach us everything we need to know about everything from space to viruses to everything else. We want them to be human. I heard the Surgeon General yesterday on NPR come out and say, listen, and he was talking about the Fauci thing. He's like, I got two young kids. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing it now with my kids. I'm seeing from a mental standpoint how it is just beating them down. And it was great to hear the Surgeon General talk about, you know.
But you know why there's so
And it goes further than this, too. He's like, I don't think people realize how difficult it is to parent.
Oh, yeah.
He said, you know, we used to always say, you know, if you have a stay-at-home mom, which we didn't in our particular, you know, that's why Mother's Day is so important. Parenting is the hardest job you'll ever have, period.
Amen.
It should be the highest paid job you have in your entire life if you're doing it right and you're doing the best you possibly can. And it's starting to wear down parents as well. And we're the adults. We're the ones that kids look at and go, how are they doing it? We don't want them to see our emotions. We don't want them to see how difficult it is. Now, this is the life. This is the way it's going to go. We're going to work through this, and we're going to do the virtual thing, and I'm going to teach this, and I'm going to do this. Right. And he goes, you know, I get to stay home. You know, my wife's got a stay-home job. But for parents who are navigating trying to get their kids to school and then pulling their kids out because they have fever and all this stuff, it's been hell for a long period of time. And we are beaten down to the point where...
Absolutely. I mean, look, the mental health part of this is huge. And this is why I hope that people will give the scientists some grace in this, because what the scientists are doing, and this is why they're careful to say anything publicly. You can read their stuff. They're saying, here's where we are. Here's what we see. Here's what the numbers are. And here's what the risks are relative to the benefits. And this is the thing about what you're saying about parenting. What people want you to do, they want scientists, they want our parents, they want you to go one step further. They want you to tell them, given that, they want you to say, and here's what you should do, and they want it to be what you want to hear.
Yes.
And in reality, what scientists do, and they've always done this all the time, here's what we've observed. You decide. Now, if you publish a paper, if you write a paper, this is so interesting to me. I'm going to geek out for just a second. So when you write a paper, you do a study. You say why you did the study. You write the recipe of exactly what you did, right? That's the whole idea of science. Here's what we did. Here's the chemicals. Here's how we study, so that anyone critique it. Then you write what you observed. Here's what we see. Then you get one section. It's about this big. Called the discussion section, where you get to infer. You get to say, given all this, here's what I believe. But the only section of that whole paper where you're saying, here's what I believe, is that little part. Yeah. The rest of the shit is just, here's what it is. And what people want, and I get this, I want it too. I want you to tell me it's going to be safe.
Yeah.
Or I want you to tell me it's 100% not safe and you're going to die if you walk out, so sit down. But I can't tell you either of those.
Yeah.
And I think that's the part that's so hard for us. It's hard for us as kids. You just said it. Do you want me to tell you the truth? Or do you want me to tell you what you want to hear? We have it a little bit in religion. All religions. Part of what draws us to religions is there. It offers us some certainty.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Instead of just saying, I don't know, we can say, well, here's the teachings.
Yeah. I'm not saying February 17th is the day it all ends. But I'll say this, because I'm real and I do speak for all people. Mm-hmm. I give kudos and the resilience to parents, particularly that have had to deal with this. We haven't done things perfectly. We haven't done things right. There are other countries that have done better with us as far as in vaccinations. We've done better than other countries. But I mean, for what we're going through and what we've gone through in this whole thing, and I'm a grace guy. And I'm compassionate, and I realize there's not as many people that I wish they would have gotten vaccinated, but I'm not even going to go. If you don't want to do it, then we're too far gone from this point. There's not a damn TV commercial or a celebrity telling you to get vaccinated. It's going to change your mind at this point. So that's fine. You do your thing. But for the most part, I think we're going to look back on this and go, we got through it. Now, ask the people who lost their lives. I go by the Lutheran Church, Shepherd of the Hills, every morning, and they've got a flag in their front yard for every church member that's passed away. Yeah. And there are thousands of them.
That is
real to me. To see that, I go, and it's not a political statement. It's like, we remember all the people on our parish who have passed away from this horrible disease.
Yes.
And it's got these things, and it breaks my heart every time I pass it, because it's like, if you've gone to, Veterans Memorial or anything else where you see all of those flags, it's just, or 9/11, where you see a list of all things, when you see it,
because we don't,
you're like,
we don't,
holy cow,
that's
a lot of people. And so to think how many people have lost their lives that probably didn't have to,
yes,
from this is heart-wrenching. The people that died certainly are the ones that we need to remember here. But I think we'll look back on this and go, we'll do that? Because we're still alive.
Yeah.
Because we made it.
No, but it's true.
Because we made it.
That's the part of being human.
Ask my grandma, who couldn't see anybody for the last 2 years of her life.
It sucks. Yes.
Yeah, because we lived.
We made it. We're going to go, oh, it was really hard, but we did everything we could. And again, sure, we made it. That's our bias. That is the way we think. We're designed to think
we made it,
that we did great.
But my grandma didn't, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think that, listen, you should look at the numbers. You should go by a church and see all the dead people, mm-hmm. right? You should do that so that you have a more accurate view of the reality. Doesn't mean that you have to do anything different, but I'll give you the relationship angle here. This is classic in relationship. Marriage broke up. It's a disaster, right? I'm moving on. I'm going to start dating. I'm going to start thing. I'm going to get in a relationship, and I'm going to do all this stuff. Just moving on, putting all that stuff behind me, right? And you know what I'm going to say. Look, dumbass, look behind you, because how did you get to this place? Well, I don't want to deal with that. I don't need to deal with that. Yes, you do. You do, because that's what brought you here.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you can look at the numbers, if you can look at the people who have passed away and not like somehow say, well, I don't need to. Because if you do that, that's a defense mechanism. If you look at it and then you go, okay, I understand it. Here's what I choose to do. Then more power to you.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
The thing about Fauci that I think is really interesting, and I just love, because I love watching like people argue. Love to watch people argue. Jules hates when I watch, any political TV and everybody's yelling at each other. I love to watch people yell at each other. So the thing that is so amazing to me about Fauci is I keep waiting for him. Every time he's up there to like just lose his shit.
Oh, he's had so many opportunities.
Just keep with Rand Paul. When he goes at it with Rand Paul,
dude.
Like I'm waiting, because it's like you don't even have to say they're baiting. Even if they're 100% true, I don't know how I could never do it. I'd last 30 seconds.
The fact that we have these hearings.
Yeah.
Of the most crooked, creepy, dumbass politicians asking the questions. Rand Paul, McDonald. I mean, I'm like, dude, McConnell. I mean, like, any of them, both sides. You guys are sitting there getting paid through stoppages and everything, and you're sitting there hammering this guy who is trying to do the best he can and saying things we don't want to hear and going, well, you said this and you mean this, and did you know about the China thing, and where did you give them money, and I'm like, dude, stop. It's just to me a huge waste. I'm not saying that some people shouldn't be investigated.
Well, everybody
but
should.
I mean, if we're investigating because today he said it was green and he changed his mind, today's red, I'm like, give me a break.
Plus he's only
it's
one.
It's changing. We don't know enough about this shit.
Here's the other thing I think is really interesting too. We want in life, we want a hero and a villain, right? We want to know, we want a reason, a cause. We want to be able to figure out who did this? Why did they do this? Who can we trust? Who can we not trust? And we want that as clear as possible in everything from intimate relationships to this. And so the thing I think is really interesting about Fauci is he's not doing all the research.
Yep.
Like, it's not him who's calculating all the numbers. But we love it because he is a person that we can attack, or the head of the CDC. It's anybody. We need to, even our politicians, what I think is really interesting that, right? We love to go after our politicians. We love to hammer on them, and we love to think that they're heroes. But the reality is they are a person who speaks for, if you will, the people that voted them in. Mm-hmm. Or he is speaking for, but that's too hard for us. It's too hard. I want my ex-wife to be a freaking bitch.
Yep.
I want her to be who did me wrong. There's no gray area. She absolutely betrayed me. There is no even inkling that it is. That's the way it is. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I want that so bad that I'll make my brain go there even when it's not quite that way.
Yep.
Because otherwise, the alternative is I have to live with uncertainty.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of uncertainty. And then maybe one step more, maybe I have to own some part of this. And to me, there's no difference than a marriage gone wrong than what we're doing with the pandemic. Not a shred of difference.
You nailed it. It's well said. And the other thing, this, and we're doing this with everybody now because we can, we've all become archaeologists. We're all paleontologists. We're all digging. We're all digging. You know, when the Mr. Rogers movie came out, everyone was trying to find dirt on Mr. Rogers.
I know.
Everyone's trying to find out, did Dr. Fauci get a DUI in 1973? I mean, what does it have to do with what he's doing now? I don't get it. Listen, if you want to look at a sexual assault of a celebrity now and go, 5 years ago, okay, I can make that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but when you're digging back, and again, there's no timetable on this thing, but when you're digging back 20, 30, 40 years and trying to find dirt on someone that has nothing to do with what they're going through right now, but because it was wrong, another thing he did wrong, he fell asleep behind the wheel of a car at a stoplight while he was drunk in college. Well, good Lord almighty. I mean, you know, it's just like the Brett Kavanaugh thing was like,
yeah.
what are we doing? I mean, does that have any bearing on whether he's going to be doing a good job years later?
It might.
If it's this much. And all I would ask is you never know how God's going to catapult you, slingshot you through life into the next big thing you're going to do. Remember what you did in your life and try to be hypocritical with it. If you want to use that as a stepping stone or a platform to not vote for someone or to put your name behind someone or endorse somebody else, we've got a very good friend of ours who is running for Senate.
Talked to him the other day. He's got another video out.
Brian Christine.
And we
he's a urologist. Wait a minute. We're going to let a guy
that works on
who holds penises all day. Have you seen his videos of his Peroni surgery? We're going to let that guy.
We love him, though.
I love him like a brother, and I would go to the gates of hell for him. But I mean, I've heard him talk. He was on our show every single week, and I stand behind him, and I love him for it. But I mean, I'm telling you, look at the mirror. We always say this, clean up your side of the street first.
Got it.
Is your side of the street cleaned up before you start bitching at your neighbors for the old car in their front yard? clean up your side first, and then maybe you can start going over there and taking a look at it. But, I mean, no one's perfect. We all make mistakes. And if you want to go back, and I was sitting with a friend of mine. What are we talking about?
Sitting on the front porch.
And
Sean
we were
Pease.
And we were just talking. Oh, it was my old roommate. And he works over at DJC, mm-hmm. Christian Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I'm like, you know, I don't even think you should be able to work for Christian Radio. I don't think you're, and I was joking with him.
Oh, because of his back.
And I'm like, and I'm like, because I used to go to strip clubs with you. He's like, he used to go to Charlie's Go-Go. And we were laughing about it. He's like, yeah, he goes, you look. I said, man, that's all of us. That's all of us.
But you know what the precedent was? And I understand why they do it. And I understand why public figures do it. And particularly now, it's the whole be careful what you say because it'll be misunderstood.
Yeah.
Right. And so we get ourselves in the trap. It's like we talk about it's like the lying trap. Right. First, it was pretty with presidents. I never took drugs. I never did anything. You know, I was all perfect. And then people are like, they start digging up. Look, you had six affairs. And you start. Then think about this. I've thought about this just isn't Bill Clinton. Well, you know, I never inhaled. Right. And then people are like, what the fuck? What is
why
that?
Didn't you?
Right. So, and I'm fast forwarding. You know, well, geez, George Bush.
George did coke.
You're right. Then we got to Barack. Barack's like, yeah, I don't, you know, I smoked weed. Yes. So but then the question becomes, well, then we got to Donald Trump, who, you know, but that's the problem we run into. It's be careful what you say. And I see this a lot. Oh, man, I see this in the business community all the time. Be careful what you say because it may be misinterpreted. And so we it's this dance of should I tell them everything? We talk about relationships, right? Mm-hmm. You're dating. Should I just come out and say, okay, here's the deal. Cheated on my first wife. I had a DUI.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, they do. Well, should I? Because it may come out.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens with public.
It depends on whether you believe you need to get in front of it, if it's going to be that
yes.
big of a deal. I tell you the one thing about again, I'm a political, but the one thing about Donald Trump, he's raised the ceiling. He's raised the ceiling for all of us. Because there wasn't anything outside killing somebody that right. he didn't do.
Well, now
and he's like, right. I mean, the whole Billy Bush thing. I mean, you look at that. That would be the end of a presidential run for anybody but Donald Trump. And he has raised that roof to the point where if there's something good that came out of his presidency was that we all are a human. We made some serious.
You think that's good, though?
No, I'm not saying it's good at all, because I think he did some things that he shouldn't have done. He knew he was wrong.
No, I know. But do you think it's good?
I think we've raised our decency line.
We've raised it or we've lowered it?
Well, depending on how you look at it. We've got more room now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, the one thing about a lot of religions is we don't do this.
You know why? Because it's exactly why. Because that's what we need. And
You have to set a line. You have to set a boundary. And I like the fact that we set the boundary really, really high. So it allows us to screw up a little bit. Because when we do go past that line, we go, for example, we had a sex education thing at our church when I was like 13.
You know, I did that at one of the Catholic churches here.
Really?
I did an intimacy and love thing. It was the most uncomfortable thing I've ever done.
And the question came up, what happens if you wake up in the middle of the night with your hand on your penis?
Was this a Catholic high school?
It was a Catholic church. I was with my dad. It was
father's. My God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't ask.
What happens if you wake up with your hand on your penis? Now, my hand's on my penis probably about 20 hours a day. Sometimes I'm holding it. And I don't even realize why I'm holding it. I don't know why guys stick their hands in their pants.
We like to make sure it's there.
It's fun. You know what it is?
It's a fidget stick.
It's a fidget stick or it's a popper.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those pop things.
Well,
we pop our penis.
It's got things to hold.
I don't even know I'm doing it. I'm surprised I haven't been caught in Walgreens, you know, just sticking my hands in my pants. Because guys just do it. It's a comfort thing. It's like a blanket. But we were told, and so the priest said, if that ever happens, take your hand away, say a prayer, and say, Lord, please keep my hand away from my penis, and move on. And I'll never forget that.
I guess that's okay.
That was a standard that was set. And from
that
point on,
that's okay.
So when I started master,
I'm glad they did not say, I thought you were going to say something like, if you do that, and then you're going to burn in hell.
No burn in hell.
Okay.
Just ask God for forgiveness, move on. So when I started masturbating when I was like 13 or 14 years old, the Sears magazine would come in and I'd take, you know, I was in radio and I would take the Sears catalog, that big thick thing in the bathroom. I'd be in there for like 45 minutes. I'm like, what are you doing in there? I'm like, nothing. I'm reading a Sears magazine. And the Sears magazine, when they describe something they're selling, they would take out all the is's, ands. And so as part of my radio, I was told to read a Sears magazine and add those words in so I could do copy, so I could be a copywriter.
Good. That's good.
That's what I said while I was jerking off. I was looking at the bra section.
Well, you were
and
doing
I remember
bra ads.
Thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Because not only was I told to keep my hands away
from
my pee-pee.
That's some Catholic guilt shit there, dude.
Oh, man.
Gosh.
And so I remember the first time I went to confession, to confess to a priest that I had masturbated. You should have seen his face. He's like,
you can't see his face.
He's like, in the Catholic Church now, you could either do it behind the screen or you could see the priest. My mom was like, you should see the priest.
Go look at my
see how they react to the shit you
go,
did.
Go tell him, Tony. Go tell him, Anthony, that you...
And I'm like, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 6 months since my last confession. I touched my penis and masturbated. Something came out.
Did you really say?
And I was waiting for the priest to go... Hell, I'm celibate. I do that like 4 or 5 times a day. What are you talking
about?
What
did he say?
Welcome to the real world. So, no, he just was like, Parby. And I said, I realized by touching my own penis and masturbating because there's life in there. There's sperm.
Yes.
And you're putting that sperm in a tissue and you're throwing it away. It's a sin.
My God.
It's a sin to pleasure yourself.
No, I know. I never thought about it that way. You guys are like,
you're killing life. You're killing life.
Because that's all pro life. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And so I remember,
terrible.
And Josh, I lost sleep over it.
Well, yeah.
And then.
But
then
you seem
I got.
To have recovered.
Then shortly after I started, I got jock itch.
So I had
this fungus, this little red mark down on my left. And so I thought, oh my God, I've given myself a venereal disease.
I thought it was the other way. God is punishing.
I was like, I've got VD. So we had a library within walking distance of a house, and I went up to the library every day for like 3 weeks trying to find books on venereal
diseases.
That's
ancient Googling.
Yeah.
Right.
The Dewey Decimal System.
Right.
I went up there trying to find every book I could to find out if it was possible to get VD by pleasing yourself. I mean, I lost sleep. It was horrible.
Did you have to ask the librarian?
And finally, I told my mom, I said, listen, I need to go see the doctor about something that's kind of private. She was totally cool.
How old were you, roughly?
14, 15 years
old. Okay.
She's like, that's totally cool.
Go talk to your dad.
So I went to the doctor, and I had this little spot, and then I had some
crusty itchy things.
Not crusty itchy things, but some sores because I was wearing it out like a jackhammer. And I was like, and then I thought that had something to do with maybe I've torn something or you know, because it's like getting a new power tool, man. I couldn't put it down. I knew it felt good, and I was going to take care of it as much as I possibly could.
I could just see the look.
And the doctor was like,
your doctor's like,
the doctor's like, cream for this, get out of here. And I was like, that's it? He's like, I said, do I have it? He's like, no. It was just.
Did he tell you what it came? What?
No. Okay. No, but I knew.
Okay, so he could look
so that
he knew that, like, he could look at you. He knew that you knew that he knew.
So that line was set really, really high.
Yeah.
It made me appreciate what I was doing and what happened once I got past that line later in life.
So what you're telling me is the line wasn't set for Donald Trump.
Because if you say everything's fine, sure, everyone does it, then it's not really special. Pass that line.
I can't believe
I just shared that story on Facebook Live this morning, by the way.
This is what happens when I come here. It's good only come once a week.
I still have that cream, by the way, and I still use it. Not for the thing about
it is the hardest thing.
So, just to go back to our point, in case you're just watching, you're like, why the hell is Tony Curry talking about holding on to his penis? We're talking about the whole virus. We had to set the standard high, one way down one aisle, one day. We had to set what we thought the parameters should be to protect everyone as much as we possibly can. Well, now all of a sudden we don't have to wear masks. Well, yeah. I mean, it changes. That line changes in the sand as it should.
But partly because we were doing... I told you, of all the things...
Yeah.
Of all the things that have come out of this, and you know, I've lost my shit 100 times on this, maybe 1,000 times.
Yeah.
The one thing I've discovered out of this is the term well, W-E-L. It has now become, I use this in my with my clients, if you say something and somebody goes, well, it doesn't even matter how they, well, it doesn't even have to be loud. Well, instant, you got them.
Yeah.
Defense. It's major defense because they don't have anything to say really that can counter that.
Yeah.
It happens. Oh my God. Think about it. It happens everywhere. You know? The husband who doesn't take out the shirt. Well, I was really busy.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. You didn't make me my favorite dinner. Well, you never did this. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
What about the Democrats and the poll? Well,
all right, what are we talking on Fox 6 this morning?
Well, I have no idea. Particularly after before you did foreplay, I did say here. I did throw out. By the way, I don't know if you know this. You may have said this because it was only here Thursday. This week, Tony, I don't know if you have your national. This is National Random Acts of Kindness Week.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, it's good. You know? Yeah.
So I think that's maybe where we're gonna go, but it makes me a little nervous.
Why?
You make me nervous when we do TV. You just make me nervous.
I said foreplay last week, and man, I mean, and Fox 6 is cool. I know everybody works up there.
They're cool.
TV people aren't cool, okay? They are cool people, but they're not cool when they're on TV. That's why if you go to news anchors at 5 o'clock today and say you have 30 seconds to open the show.
Stretch.
They can't do it. Mm-hmm. Crazy day today. The weather was beautiful. And then right away they want to go, can we please look at the traffic? Can I please do a traffic report? They cannot talk amongst them unless they have a teleprompter in front of them. They could if they were outside the TV station, but they can't when they're on camera. They can't do it.
Because because they got to do TV.
It's super
talk.
Uncomfortable. Whenever you have a live event and you're waiting for someone to take the podium, it's the most uncomfortable, awkward moment in TV history. The stretch, because they're trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to do? Because we can't get something.
You know what, though? Good ones are really
good. Fox is the best.
They are really good at it.
And so for me to say foreplay on the show last week, and they all, they all kind of got the.
But it's not there, or that's exactly what it is. It wasn't that you said it and it made them personally uncomfortable.
No, yeah.
It was, he said what we know we would never say.
Yeah. I was happy to say it for you.
But you can say it because it's clinical.
Maybe I'll stretch it today a little bit.
No, dude.
Give me a word to say. Want me to say it?
No.
Say orgasm?
No.
Can I say penis? Can I share my penis story?
No.
What about jock itch?
You need something. You can't call it jock itch.
Yeah, we were talking about jock itch this morning on Curry and Claypo, and I'm glad you brought that up.
You can say we're talking about fungal infections. That's better. Say we're talking about fungal infections. They're watching. They're probably watching right now. They're probably watching.
It was a Valentine's Day segment, for gosh sakes, and so I had to say something about sex or
intimacy.
You could have
said intimacy. You can say intimacy, romance.
You can't say sex on TV. You have to say
heavy
intimacy.
Petting.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I got in.
You can
one
say heavy petting?
I got in on one of my segments, heavy petting.
Really?
Yeah, because I read it in someplace else, and heavy petting is clinical. heavy
petting
is
so
essentially
stupid.
Heavy petting is essentially foreplay. It's just that it's heavy petting because you don't call when a teenager's doing it with another teenager. You don't really call it foreplay.
What
right?
about dry humping? Can I say dry humping?
No, that's heavy petting.
Heavy petting's not dry humping. Dry humping and heavy petting are two totally different
things. No, it's heavy petting.
That's probably why I need that damn cream.
Because are you doing it out on the outside of your pants? Oh, geez, what's happened to you?
Dude, I'm surprised, man. I used to be in so much pain.
Well, then why were you doing it?
Well, because I was a good boy. I was 16, 17 years old. I wasn't going to have sex yet. So we dry humped.
So instead... Oh, that? I thought you meant about pleasing yourself.
Well, sometimes I did it.
Yeah, the dry humping is painful.
There was a part of my mom's carpet. It was blue and green shag carpet. It was great for that. I'm so glad you're back. I'm so glad you're not here 5 days a week anymore.
Well, actually, my kids are adults now, so it doesn't even matter anymore.
I don't even
like
know.
When we first started doing this, I was worrying because I had teenagers.
Yeah.
Like my kids, like now they're on their own. It doesn't.
Yeah, well, I'm divorced now. I can say whatever.
You know what's going to happen. You know where you're coming into. You're getting to the place where you and your kids, not your daughter.
Thank God my kids.
Not your daughter, but you and your kids are both going to be doing heavy petting.
You know what? That's the line I'll set. Heavy petting's okay. Try to save yourself for the rest, because once you open that dam, it's over.
Then they're going to say, Dad, what's heavy petting? Lila asking you about anything?
Is that even still used? Do kids,
no, it's clinical. Kids don't. Kids never used that.
We say second base. Second base is the same as heavy
but
peg.
But that's, yeah, we use that's a clinical. Clinical.
I should talk. I'm meeting with Dr. Rab today to do Dark Side of the Pooch. I'll talk about heavy petting. I heavy petted my.
Well, pets do heavy petting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, yeah, they do. Yeah, pets do heavy petting.
Yeah. We do heavy petting on the belly.
I watched when we were in England, I watched a cow do heavy petting.
I bet you did. Talk about one of our great clients here on Tony Curry Radio. And then don't forget, it's Blues Almighty Day at noon and 8 tonight. We're going to have Blues Almighty with Austin Hanks, a fresh new show. We have the Damon Johnson Show goes off at noon and 8 tomorrow. We also have When in Rome with Stuart Rome. Great new show. We started with 3 shows in. Of course, you can go back and listen to all these shows on podcast by the end of the week through Spotify. It's a great little platform partnership we've gotten up with Spotify. They actually reached out to us, so we're super happy about that. Adapter Parish is on there. Dark Side of the Pooch is on there. Mission Minded is on there. Livewire Wednesday will be on there. All the shows, so you can listen to any of the shows. We have over 100 shows up. You can listen to any of those shows over the next couple of days here on Tony Curry Radio.
Did they come to you right after the Joe Rogan thing? They're like, we got, you know, Joe, Tony.
No, actually, the Joe Rogan thing was helpful for us because I think more people now are listening to Spotify than ever. That was great. You know, you got offered $100 million to leave. So that should tell you something. And that's... We love Joe, because Joe's like Charles Barkley. I'm not a role model because he's not. He's like, I'm just a regular guy just talking, and people seem to like it, so I just keep doing it, and they're paying me $500 million. But he doesn't.
It is like
he doesn't want that responsibility of being a guy
like
that people
Charles,
follow.
I like that. It's more like Charles Barkley because he's not. He says things that are wrong. Says things that are inappropriate. He says things that are misinformed. Right. Among things, he also says things that are informed, etc. But I like that Charles Barkley is because he's like, I'm not leaning, I don't have an agenda.
Yeah.
Charles will tell you, I don't have an agenda.
And he doesn't lose his job for whatever he says, so he might as well continue. And that's why his numbers are so big, because he is, Charles is being Charles. But I mean, you don't get to pick whether you're a role model or not. You don't get to pick.
Well, I don't
now,
like
some people want to be a role model, and they're not very good at it.
No.
But when you have a huge following, you are, in some case, Kim Kardashian's a role model for a lot of people, whether she wants it
she
or not.
She is for me. I love
and
her.
And there is a this would be a great show. There is a responsibility that comes along with it. What you do with that responsibility is entirely up to you.
There you go. That's true.
Right?
You can't say, well, I don't want that part of the job.
No. Because somewhere someone's idolizing you, and you better realize that they'll kill themselves for you.
Yes.
And so you have to be
like,
careful.
Well, I didn't ask for that. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
You have a huge following.
That's in the job description.
No doubt. All right. Talk about one of our great sponsors. We'll do some classic rock. We'll be live on Fox 6 coming up here in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you about John Gray. Just talked to John Gray the other day. John Gray is not only my financial advisor, and he needs to be your financial advisor, but he's also, I think he's my therapist. John Gray has been managing people's money for decades, and he manages not just your money and your investments. He helps you manage according to your whole life. Are you having kids? Are your kids growing up? Are you going through a divorce? Are you going through changes in your job? He's there to help you make the most of your money. Go to his webpage today. It's DriscollGray.com. Great market insights. And the best thing about John Gray, he'll just tell you like it is. He'll tell you like it is. John Gray at DriscollGray.com.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.